There's one thing that Disney movies always get right. How many of you have watched a Disney movie? Okay, I figured most of you have seen them. Now, think about the Disney movies you've seen, and think about what the plot is, think about what's happening, and they're all based around a relationship, right, that's trying to form, and all these things are trying to keep it from happening. Or, like, you know, Jasmine and Aladdin. Or it's a relationship that already exists and there are things trying to tear it apart. Everyone is about relationship and the things that try to rip it apart and tear it apart. I asked this question last night in our young adult group. I said, you know, think about what all the Disney movies get right. And one of them said, they kill the parents right away. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I didn't realize at the moment how sick an answer that was. But no, they all... That's one of the ways they create the tension, right? They kill someone. They do something to recognize that relationships in this world always have things that are trying to pull them apart and rip them apart or keep them from happening at all in the first place. And Disney's not always realistic about the whole happily ever after stuff, but they get it right when they paint and show how relationships are always a struggle. And look, you may not have a Gaston trying to keep you from your love. You may not have a Scar meddling with you in your relationship with your children. You may not have an evil stepmother who's messing with your relationship possibilities. But every relationship, every us in your life is going to go through attacks from the inside, from your own brokenness, and from the outside as well. Things are going to happen that are going to try and pull those relationships apart. What will hold us together? And so for the last few weeks, we've been looking at a prayer Jesus taught his disciples to pray and showing how it really gives us a template for all of our relationships that we can apply to all of our relationships. So let's read the Lord's Prayer again together and let's follow along. Let's all read it together. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And so we've said there are four things that this prayer, that are in this prayer that are part of every relationship. Every relationship has a kingdom to build, needs to be met, debts to be forgiven, and temptations to be avoided. And so over the last few weeks, we've picked a few different relationships to model these things. So for the whole idea of kingdoms to build or a will to be centered on, we talked about marriage a few weeks ago. And if you weren't here, go back and listen to it in the podcast. And we said, look, in your marriage, pay attention to the tension. Because if the tension is caused by you, the husband, trying to build your kingdom and have your will be done, or the wife trying to build her kingdom and have her will be done, that's negative tension. That won't get you anywhere. And if the best you can hope for is to just compromise so you're, you know, kind of build a little bit of each other's kingdoms, well, that's not enough. There's something better that you and I can work toward in marriage. And that is to build God's kingdom, to serve his will. And that comes with its own set of tensions, for sure. But that's positive tension that will be moving you forward toward a purpose. So he said, pay attention to the tension in your marriage. Is it the tension of the two of you together serving God's will, building his kingdom, or fighting because you're trying to build your own? And then we talked about, when we came to the give us this day our daily bread, we talked about parenting. And how with your children, how vital it is that, yes, there are needs to be met in that relationship. And the job of a parent, the goal of a parent, is to teach your children our daily bread. That needs, it's not about their needs, it's about our needs. And that what our family does is we trust God to supply our needs. And we practice that every day. And becoming realistic about what are your needs versus what are your wants, desires, passion, you know, like all the things that aren't needs. Teaching your children every day, we trust God for what we need. He's already given it to us. And then last week, when it came to talking about avoiding temptation, we looked at dating and we said, look, the greatest temptation in dating and in any relationship, honestly, too, is that you would treat a relationship as the cure for your discontentment. And we said the best way to date is to be content before you even start. Get that contentment from God before you even start. That's true also in parenting. That's true in marriage. All these things are true of every relationship. Today, though, we want to wrestle with what do you do when a relationship is being torn at and picked at and pulled apart, when it's breaking or when it's broken? What's going to hold that relationship together? What are you going to do when it turns out that these relationship dreams aren't quite panning out the way you hoped they would? Well, there's one part of the verse we haven't talked about, so you probably guessed what we're focusing on today. Today we're going to focus on forgiveness. And Jesus tells us, he says, this is how you should pray then, because God already knows everything you need, so this is how you should pray. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who have sinned against us. Forgive us for the things we do wrong as we forgive those who do things that wrong us. Have you ever prayed that? I don't mean said those words. I mean, have you ever actually prayed, you know what, God? When I offend you, I want you to treat me the same way I treat other people when they offend me. Have you ever, like, literally, truly, honestly prayed, yes, God, this is what I want. I want the same treatment that I give to others who offend me from you when I offend you. So yes, God, I would like you to give me the silent treatment. Yes, God, I'd like you to write me off and quit on me and decide I'm not worth it anymore. Yes, God, I'd like you to gossip about me with everyone else in heaven and say bad things behind my back, right? Yes, God, I'd like you to go through all kinds of imaginary arguments with me where you just tell me how I'm wrong and then I'm like, oh, I'm so wrong. Yes, that's what I want you to do, God. I want you to resent me, God. I want you to attack me, God. God, I want you, when I offend you, I want you to treat me the way I treat others when they offend me. Have you ever realized that's what Jesus is saying here? And if you pray that, that's what you're praying. Have you ever wondered, well, why didn't Jesus just say, forgive us our debts? Forgive us our sins. Why did he have to add, as we forgive those who are indebted to us, the same way that we forgive those who offend us and hurt us? Something happens when you pray that prayer that way. It exposes your heart and it reveals what kind of world you want to live in. I know it's just a few words, but listen to me. It reveals what kind of world you want to live in when you, and whether or not you can actually truly pray that prayer. Not just say the words, but really mean it. God, I want you to forgive me the way I forgive others. Because when I ask God to forgive me, I'm asking for the world to be a certain way. Recognize that's what you're doing. When you say, God, forgive me for my sin, you're saying, God, I want the world to be a certain way. I'm asking for the world to be the kind of world where grace and forgiveness govern relationships. I'm asking for my relationship with God to be based on forgiveness and grace, not on justice. Because cold justice would say, you and I have to pay for everything we do wrong, every sin, and that would be the end of you and I here today. When you ask God to forgive you, you're saying you want a relationship with him based on forgiveness and grace, not on justice. But when you start praying, God, forgive me the way I forgive others, you're immediately confronted with this, what might be an inconsistency in your life. Because when a relationship goes bad or when someone hurts you or offends you or doesn't live up to your expectations, you might pray something more along the lines of, God, get them, right? And maybe you don't sound that evil about it, but it's, yeah, God, you know, you got to take care of them. God, God, please, right? Go get that person, right? Which way do you want the world to be? Which way do you want the world to be? Do you want God to relate to us based on forgiveness and grace or based on cold, hard justice? Or do you want it one way for you and one way for everyone else? Because the message that God gives us, go read the book of Job. And it's 42 chapters. I'll try and summarize it here in one simple sentence. God says, leave justice to me because you don't know enough to do justice. Essentially, leave justice to me. You don't know enough to actually do justice. You leave justice to me and focus on living together in a world of grace and forgiveness. So this little prayer exposes us. I can't pray, forgive me my debts, my sins, as I forgive those who've sinned against me or who are indebted to me, without remembering that what I'm praying for is a world where relationships are based on forgiveness and grace, not on cold justice. Look, I know there are situations in your life right now. There are relationships in your life right now. As we go into Thanksgiving and Christmas, some of us are like, yay, we're going to be with our family. And others of us are like, oh man, here they come. I'm going to have to deal with a day of them or a few days of them around and the things they're going to say and the things they're going to want to talk about. For a lot of us, these times are times of pain and hurt and brokenness, or they bring up memories of pain and hurt and brokenness. You know, and maybe you've been approaching this season of the year, or maybe there's just relationships in your life that you've been approaching more from this justice perspective instead of the forgiveness and grace perspective. And today, God wants to deal with that in your heart. He wants you to hear that when relationships are fracturing and breaking, what holds them together is forgiveness. They don't have to fall apart completely. And if they have, they don't have to stay that way. There can be healing. There's a story in the Bible about two brothers whose relationship was hopelessly fractured. I mean, it was so bad that the mom had to send one of them away so the other one wouldn't kill him. Their names were Jacob and Esau. And they were the sons of Isaac and Rebekah. And if a lot of us, we've been reading through this in our small groups for the past month or so. And so you might remember the story, Isaac and Rebekah. It's this beautiful story. You know, they find Rebekah, the perfect wife for Isaac, and he loves her and adores her. And they have this beautiful marriage together. And then they have these two boys, Esau and Jacob. And from the start, it's this contentious relationship. Esau is born first. And Jacob comes out second, but he's actually holding on to his brother's heels. So they're fighting even from the womb to who's going to be in front of the other. And they grow up. Esau loves to hunt, and Jacob prefers to work at home. And Esau is the one who the father prefers, but Jacob's the one the mother prefers. Esau, because he's born first, he gets the birthright. He gets the inheritance. So effectively, he's going to control the family wealth and be in charge of the whole family when their father, Isaac, dies. But there's this contention always there between them. And then one day, when they're older, Esau goes out hunting. A lot of you know the story, but listen. Esau goes out hunting, and he's hunting and hunting, can't catch anything, can't find anything. So he drags himself back into their camp, right? It's not a house like you live in, picture like tents and things like that. Drags himself back in, half starved, because he's been out running and chasing game, trying to catch something to eat. And he drags himself back in the camp, half starved, and there's his brother Jacob cooking a bowl of stew. And he's like, I'm starving. You got to give me some stew. I'm starving. And Jacob, like any good loving brother, says, well, hold on. I can see you're hungry, but this is my stew. I recognize you want some. What's in it for me? What do I get out of it? It reminds me, there was a time when I was a little kid. I was running around outside. I was hot. I was thirsty. I just needed something refreshing. And I heard the Mr. Softy truck. Mr. Softy is an ice cream truck in New York City. And I was out back playing with my friends. I came running out, but he was gone already. But there stood my little sister, Darlene, with her snow cone. And she's licking the snow cone. I'm like, oh, Darlene, you got to give me a lick. And she's like, hold on. She's right here, so I'm not going to look at her because she's not going to like the way I tell the story. But she's like, hold on. Give me 25 cents and I'll let you have a lick. Now, the thing probably cost 35 cents and my mom paid for it. But it's like 25 cents and I'll give you a lick. So I didn't get a snow cone. I went thirsty and almost died. But, you know, I'm okay now. I survived. Esau, however, he he was so hungry, he didn't even think twice. He just said, fine, whatever, you can have the birthright, just give me the bowl of stew. He gets the bowl of stew, and he eats, and he lives. And then years go by, years and years and years go by, and Isaac gets old, and he begins to, his health fails, his eyes begin to fail. And the day comes when he knows he's going to die soon, so he calls in Esau. Because somehow Isaac didn't know about any of this. Esau probably forgot. Jacob certainly didn't tell Isaac. Isaac probably never would have let the whole thing stand. He would have said, no, 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 no. So Isaac calls in Esau and says to him, I'm going to die soon, so here's what I want you to do. Go hunting and catch me the wild game I like to eat and bring it back, cook me a meal, and then we'll have a meal together, and I'm going to bless you and give you your birthright now. So Esau goes out hunting. And meanwhile, Rebekah, their mom, grabs Jacob and says, come here. Esau's gone hunting to get a meal together for your father so he can give him the blessing and the birthright, but you need to get it. So I've already got the food I know he wants prepared, so let's just dress you up. So they dress Jacob up to look like Esau. Esau was hairy and stinky because he was always running around hunting, right? So they put like fake hair on his arms, goat hair and stuff, and they put on dirty clothes so he would smell like his brother, and brought him into Isaac and fed him this meal that he was looking forward to. And Isaac unwittingly blessed Jacob and gave him the birthright. So they finish up. Jacob walks, sneaks out, and he's now got the blessing and the birthright. It worked. And as soon as they leave, in comes Esau with the meal he had gone and hunted and prepared, brings it to his father and says, here's the meal, father. And Isaac says, who are you? He says, it's me, your son Esau. Well, who was the person I just blessed? And then he realized what happened, and Isaac just began to shake in anger, but it was too late. You can't take that back once you've given the blessing. So Esau falls on his knees and he's crying and begging his father, but father, isn't there some blessing you can give me? Anything. And he says, I can't. I've given it all to your brother. He will rule over you. He will be in charge of you. He's got all the blessing. So Esau walks out of that place, that tent, bitter and angry and empty. And he decides there and then, I'm going to kill my brother as soon as dad dies. As soon as he dies and we go through the mourning period, Jacob's dead. And he begins to plot. His mom finds out, Rebekah finds out. And so she goes to Isaac with this story to try and get him to let her send Jacob away to protect him. So she goes in to Isaac and says, look, Isaac should get married, and if he were to marry one of these Canaanite women around here, I would just die. So we've got to send him back to where we come from so he can find a good wife and get married. Let's send him back to our family so he can find a good wife. And Isaac says, yes, I don't want him marrying a Canaanite woman either. Let's send him out of here. So they send him away, and as he's leaving, Rebekah says, look, just stay away until your brother calms down, right? Just stay away for a while until he calms down. Esau hears about this. And here's about how, you know, they wanted to send him away because they didn't want him to marry a Canaanite woman, because his parents evidently really don't want their sons married to Canaanite women. So guess what Esau does? He goes and he marries a Canaanite woman. Does that sound familiar to you? Like, if you just look at your family or extended family, have you seen situations like that ever play out where that kind of spitefulness? And so decades go by. Jacob is married, and there's a whole other story. He marries these two sisters. You can go read about that. And has lots of kids. And the time comes after he's grown very, very wealthy. He's got flocks and herds and all kinds of things. He's very, very wealthy now, big family. And God says, it's time for you to go back home. I want you to move back to your home, to your inheritance. And he's nervous. He's scared because Esau's there. But they start to travel because God told them to go back there. And as they're on their way, getting closer, he sends some messengers to his brother Esau saying, hey, I'm coming home. And the messengers go and they tell Esau. Then they come back to Jacob and he's like, well, what did he say? What did he say? And they're like, well, he got on a horse and he got 400 men and they're coming to see you. Yeah, that doesn't sound good, does it? That sounds bad. 400 men does not sound like, oh, we miss you. We want to welcome you home. It sounds like we're going to come kill you. So Jacob, though, God's told him to do this, so he keeps going. And he's smart, though. So he sends wave after wave of gifts, you know, whole flocks of sheep and goats and all kinds of animals. He just wave after wave of gifts so that as his brother is coming to meet him, he'll encounter this first wave of gifts and think, oh, nice try, kid, and keep going. And then a second wave of gifts and, well, okay, this is a lot of stuff he's giving me. And then a third wave, and I'm like, oh, you know, maybe that'll soften him up, and he won't be looking for justice so much anymore, because now, I mean, look at all he just gave me. Maybe that'll, you know, put him in a good place. So they keep going down the road, and they come to the place where they're about to meet Esau. Jacob lines up all of his children. He puts his favorite children at the back to protect them. And I'm not joking. He actually did that. And then he goes out in front of them all, and he just bows down on the ground and just puts his face on the ground. And Esau arrives, and he runs up to Jacob, grabs him, picks him up, hugs him, throws his arms around his neck, kisses him, and just holding him and holding him tight. And he says, what are all these bleeding goats? What are all these animals and things and gifts that you've sent me? I keep running into along the way. And Jacob says, well, you know, I thought I would, you know, send these to you. Effectively, I didn't think there was any chance that you'd forgive me. I figured I need to butter you up. I need to soften you up, because I don't see there'd be any way that you wouldn't come to me wanting justice for what I did to you. And so I've been sending all these gifts so that you wouldn't kill me. I couldn't in a million years imagine that you would somehow forgive me. But Jacob did, or Esau did forgive him and embraced him and brought him in. And the words that Esau says in that moment, I think, can be instructive to us and give us a clue about where forgiveness that can heal a relationship like this even, where that might come from. Just four simple words he says to his brother. I already have plenty, my brother. Not my enemy, I already have plenty. Why was Esau able to forgive? I think the key is in those four words. I already have plenty. See, when Esau thought he had nothing, when Esau felt empty, when he didn't know that God was going to provide for him and care for him and didn't trust God for that, what did he want to govern his relationship with Jacob? Justice. I want justice. Jacob has to die, right? When he thought there'd be no blessing for him from his father, no future for him, he was empty, and so he wanted justice. And the lust for justice drove that wedge between him and his brother that lasted decades. But as time went by and God blessed Esau and provided for him and cared for him, he stopped living out of that place of emptiness and came to live in this place of plenty where he could now begin to relate to his brother based on forgiveness, not justice. What about you? Forgiveness flows from the place of plenty. Are you in the place of plenty, or are you in the place of emptiness? Listen, I'm not talking about having a lot of stuff, right? I'm not saying, well, when you're wealthy, it's easier to forgive people. A lot of people think that's true, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that just because you have a lot, it's easier to forgive. So I'm not saying, like, if your wife, you know, hurts your feelings or offends you, you say, no, it's okay, honey, I forgive you. I've got plenty of other wives. That's not what I mean, that you have just so much more that you can forgive, right? I'm trying to capture here what Jesus was talking about when he told the story of the unmerciful servant. Jesus told this, or the unforgiving servant. Jesus told the story about a servant who owes the king a lifetime's worth of money, more than he could ever come up with, right? You remember this story? And he goes to the king, and the king's like, I could throw you in prison. I could do all kinds of things to you and your family. But you know what? Instead of choosing to relate to you based on justice, I'm going to eat that debt. I'll take the justice in on myself. And I'm going to build our relationship on forgiveness and grace. Mercy. And he forgives it all. And then that servant goes out and finds someone who owes him $5. And he's like, hey, you owe me $5. And he throws him in jail until he can pay off the debt. And the king finds out, he's like, what in the world is wrong with you? I forgave you. I brought you into that place of plenty. You then went and treated this guy you like you were still in the place of emptiness, right? You treated him with justice, even though I set a standard of forgiveness for you. And then he throws that servant into prison for his whole life. And then Jesus says these words that just should rattle you to your core. This is how our Heavenly Father will treat you if you don't forgive your brother who sins against you. Paul later writes these words, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. Listen, here's what I'm trying to say. Jesus has brought you into a place of plenty. He did that when he established forgiveness and grace as the basis of our relationship with God. You already have everything you need forever and always. And that puts you and me in the place of plenty. So why would I keep choosing to live from the place of emptiness as though I don't have what Jesus has given me? Why would I approach my relationships from a place of emptiness when Jesus has brought me to a place of plenty? We're all sitting here with all kinds of relationships and all kinds of relationship dreams, some that have faded and some that have fractured in one way or another. We're disappointed, we're hurt, we're angry. And here's the question. Do you want to stay in that place you're in? Is that where you want to live? In that place of brokenness and anger and frustration and disillusionment? Or do you want to move forward and heal? Are you sitting here this morning saying to God that you want relationships based on justice, knowing full well what that means for you and I in our sinful state? Because you can't have a relationship with God based on forgiveness and then relationship with other people based on justice. You have relationship with God based on forgiveness, and then that transforms all your other relationships with everyone else. So now they're now based on forgiveness and grace too. God says, leave justice in my hands. You live together in forgiveness and grace. So whatever the situation is, whatever the relationship is, if you're a Christian and Jesus has brought you into that place of plenty, where you and I already have all we need, the place where relationships are based on grace and forgiveness, and you want to see your relationships heal, you want to be part of helping them to heal, then start living out of the place of plenty with Jesus and begin practicing the forgiveness he's given you. Now, look, you and I could walk out of here thinking in our heads, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I choose. I want to live on forgiveness and grace. That's how I'm going to go. But then not actually do it, right? We can think it in our head, but not actually live it out. You can agree in your mind forgiveness is better. God's standard of forgiveness he's given us is better. But then doing it's another thing. So, and knowing that you're doing it's another thing. So I went looking, what are some questions you and I could ask ourselves to just measure how well am I doing at forgiving others in relationships that maybe have hurt me? And I found something a pastor named Ron Edmondson had put out, and I thought it was worth sharing. And remember, as we read these, forgiveness, just to be clear, I feel like I have to say this every time when we talk about forgiveness. Forgiveness is not saying that sin is okay. It's not. Justice still has to be taken care of. We're just putting that in God's hands. Right? Forgiveness is not pretending that evil is good. Forgiveness is not saying, oh, never mind, just forget it all. It's not just, oh, keep hurting me. That's never what forgiveness means. Forgiveness means choosing to not get the other person back, to not hold the grudge, to not try and exact justice and be that kind of world when God's called us into living in a world of forgiveness and grace and trusting him for justice. So here's just a few five tests you can put yourself through. The first one calls the thought test. When you see a person, is the first thought you have the injury that they caused you? If whenever you see that person, the first thing you think about is the hurt that they caused you, then you probably haven't quite yet forgiven them. And there's still room for you to keep working on it and praying about it. The second one is the general thoughts test. Can you think positive thoughts about that person? Or are you only able to think negative thoughts about that person? Are you only able to see everything that's wrong with them? Or can you think in any way that's positive about that person? If you can't think in any way that's positive about that person, then you probably haven't yet forgiven them. You're probably still approaching it from a justice perspective instead of trusting God for justice and approaching it from the forgiveness and grace perspective. Third test. The opportunity to help them test. Ask yourself, If I knew that they were in trouble and needed help, would I help them? Would you go and help them? In the past, when you were friends, in the past, when you were close, when the relationship was healthy, you would have been there immediately to help them. Would you help them now? Or do you know they need help, but you're ignoring them now? Because it's like, forget them. They don't deserve my help. They don't deserve my attention. Which world are you living in here with that? The fourth one is the revenge test. Are you still sitting here thinking about how you might get even with that person? Right? I don't mean, look, there are things we do that need consequences, that deserve consequences. And forgiveness is not protecting someone from consequences. That's not what forgiveness is. But forgiveness is not trying to get revenge to hurt them the way they hurt you. That's not what forgiveness is. And if that's in you, that desire to get revenge still, that you're thinking about how you might, then you haven't yet forgiven. Then the last one is, he calls the failure test. Have you stopped, maybe not actively trying to see them do bad, but you know how sometimes there's a person who's hurt you and you're just hoping and waiting for them to like fail? Like just something to go wrong and you're like, yeah, see, that's what you get, right? And you start to say things like, even though you follow Christ and we don't believe in karma, you say, yep, that's karma, that's what you get, right? Because that somehow, you're what? You're looking for justice. When God has declared, leave justice to me, I have set a new standard for relationship, grace and forgiveness. Are you looking for grace and forgiveness? So those are just five things. You can go, and maybe there's a couple relationships in your life you can ask those questions about to help you see, not just in your mind are you wanting to have live in this world of forgiveness, but are you actually living in that world of forgiveness? And now look, I know after all this, some of you inside might be screaming, well, what about injustice? What about all the injustices that happen though? Something's got to deal with all that. And just look above my head, would you? Jesus was served all my injustice on the cross. All the justice that I deserved was served to Jesus on the cross. All the justice that you deserve was served to Jesus on the cross. The justice your brother deserves was served to Jesus on the cross. The justice your sister deserves was served to Jesus on the cross. The justice your husband deserves, your wife, the justice that child, your child deserves, already served to Jesus on the cross. The justice that friend deserves, already served to Jesus. The justice your ex deserves, already served to Jesus on the cross. Everyone's justice was served to Jesus on the cross. Not everyone accepts that. Not everyone accepts that and then enters into this place of plenty that Jesus calls us into. But you have, I'd say most of you have. And when you enter that place of plenty, where relationships are no longer based on justice because Jesus has taken it and served justice, but now relationships are based on forgiveness and grace, it doesn't just change your relationship with God. It changes your relationship with everyone. And if it's not changing your relationship with everyone, then come back to the cross. Say, Jesus, I think I might have forgotten that I'm a sinner. I think I might have forgotten that what I deserve is justice and death. I think I might have forgotten that I was formed out of dust. And so my expectations that I'm owed anything is just foolishness. I think I might have forgotten that I was not only formed out of dust, but then I rebel against the Creator who made me, and I do what I want to do instead of what He wants me to do. God, I might have forgotten my sin, so God, remind me that You chose to build Your relationship with me not on the justice I deserve. You put that on Yourself, and now You've made a new standard of forgiveness and grace from our relationship. God, help me to remember that. And that's when you and I can begin to pray, forgive us our debts in the same way that we forgive our debtors. Because we want a world where relationships are held together by forgiveness and grace, We want to be part of that world. We want to build that world with Jesus.